This is an interview with Governor Victor Atiyeh at his office in downtown Portland, Oregon. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is May 3rd, 1993, and this is Tape 30, Side 1. In this session, we're continuing to talk about the issues of the 79 legislature, and I had planned on asking about one issue that's become, I guess, more recently popular than perhaps it was back then, but it was an effort to ban disposable diapers.
Yeah.
That's become a big issue nowadays because of landfills and things like that.
Yeah, it's, you know, you get up against convenience, but that's created a lot of problems for our landfills. But we're back to an earlier discussion, and that basically is the discussion of how you deal with solid waste. And instead of trying to deal with solid waste, you know, as a total problem, here you find people picking one item and another item. I think most recently has been styrofoam and that sort of thing. And so we're really not getting at what needs to be done. We're not working at it like we worked for as thoughtfully as we did for air and water pollution. We're not doing nearly as well in the area of ground pollution.
Is it more complicated for ground pollution than it is for air and water?
Well, here again, you see, you get into a situation. One of the things that has been discussed has been incineration, and yet some people bitterly complain because of air pollution. So, you know, which are you going to pollute and how much can you pollute it? It's impossible for a civilization to live without some kind of pollution of some kind. Matter of fact, even when the Earth was being born, there was an awful lot of pollution going out with the volcanoes and all the dust that was in the air and all things like that. There was an article, incidentally, years ago, still have it somewhere, and this was a professor at Oregon State University. And the paper was the point behind the paper was that the Earth can take pollution, you know, without any harm. Obviously, some level, not a heavy dose, but that's just a normal cycle of this Earth. But when we start talking about now, for example, back to air pollution, backyard burning. Remember, people used to burn leaves and it smelled real good. It smelled good. Can't do that anymore. So what happens? This goes to landfill.
All right.
You know, you can say compost, but heck, how much compost can anybody have? When we have trees growing all the time and limbs being cut and leaves falling and all the rest of that thing that goes along with it, trimmings from the yard and one thing and another, now you can't burn it. So it goes to a landfill, which is now solid waste. And we're running out of ground to put solid waste. And I don't think anyone really looks at it in terms of a balance. Okay, we'll do some of this, so we'll have less of that. But it's really strange. Backyard burning is forbidden. That is for residential people. Outdoor burning is permitted in agriculture. That's allowed. And, of course, outside barbecues are acceptable. So you have, if you had a built-in outside barbecue, you can put all the leaves and limbs in there you want.
All right.
That's legal. But I still say the thing is that we haven't sat down and really done a good job of trying to figure out how to deal with it. I think incineration is a good idea. Now, maybe if there are some pollutants that come out of there, you've got technical assistance, scrubbers or whatever you need to do, and allow this to take place. I noticed in my own fireplace, I burn a lot of paper and things of that kind, egg cartons and milk cartons and whatever. And I just notice this is huge, or sometimes some cardboard or something that I can't recycle. We have recycling and I do that. But I notice this would amount to, if over a period of, you know, it takes me, I don't know, a month, 2 months or whatever, and then I clean out the fireplace. But I end up with a small pile of ashes.
Right.
And had I thrown this in the garbage and had this would have been I don't know how many cubic feet, but it would have been a lot of cubic feet of stuff. And we're only talking maybe one cubic foot So, you know, we've got to deal with it and deal in a good way. I was involved personally, incidentally. I'm a member of the Rydell Environmental Technology. And we had built this recycling plant to make compost out in northeast Portland. And what was occurring was that we actually were recycling. That was the whole idea. You'd get in 100% from a garbage truck, and maybe, oh, I've forgotten, but 60% of it would go to landfill. Mm-hmm. That's going to vary. It depends on what comes in the thing. But so that means 30% isn't. The remaining 30% is either recycled or made into compost. Compost is then used by the agriculture industry in a variety of ways. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Well, the particular problem is the thing did work. It worked really well. The only problem basically was it was put in the wrong place because there was an odor. In order to combat the odor, it took another $3 million to build some kind of a shelter to contain the odor. And Rydell wasn't able to come up with that extra money. So, as it turns out, we turned it back to the bonding company, and they've got it. But it's still a good system. Well, okay, maybe that didn't work exactly, although it was working, and I truly believe, because I was close to it, that's a good system. It does work. It works well. It just happened to be in the wrong place. Okay, you know, why not encourage some of that, to work toward it, to deal with it. But anyway, that's an expanded version of disposable diapers. Then the argument comes, of course, that it's convenient, and you've got the industry that's involved with it, and what's Oregon? There's always the question, you know, okay, if Oregon does it, Oregon is 1% of the population of the United States. A disposable diaper company can just write us off. I mean, okay, 1%. And obviously, that would be 1% of whatever sales they've got, because we've only got 1% of the babies. It's all relative. So when you start dealing with things like that, you say, well, the companies don't care. What's Oregon going to get into? It isn't like California or New York or Illinois.
But I guess Oregon's always looked upon itself as a trendsetter in terms of environmental issues.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't stop us. Uh-huh. But if we think we're going to change the whole world, I understand you've got to take the first step, and I have no problem with that at all. Mm-hmm. Well, like our land use, which you talked about, I think we're still the only state in the union that's got statewide land use planning. Mm-hmm. And we were the first state on this, what they call a bottle bill.
Bottle bill. Was that the effect on the bottle bill? I mean, did companies write us off on?
Well, there was always that threat, but you know, you just take it and say that's the way she's going to go.
Right.
Our main problem is we did lose cannery. Not a cannery, a bottle making a bottle. There was one of the I forgot which of the large companies was making bottles out here. Well, uh-huh. There was no point in making a bottle, you know. But I don't have any problem with that, and I know we have to start somewhere. And I don't mind that Oregon does it, but you got to be kind of rational about it. Mm-hmm. But back still, I still think, instead of trying to do things a piece at a time as whatever seems to catch your fancy, you really ought to sit down and figure out what are we going to do with solid waste.
Right.
And what's the best way to deal with it.
Right.
And create incentives for having it done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about legislation that was not passed during the 1979 session. The disposable diaper issue was one. Another one was purchase or construction of a visitor center at the state prison for inmates who have to have overnight visits with their spouses.
And, conjugal visits is what it's called. I can summarize my own view on that whole subject. And that is, if you can't do the time, you shouldn't do the crime. It's that simple. And they can have all the conjugal visits, and they can watch all the television they want, and they can come and go as they please, and they can drink all the beer they want. if they just stay out of prison. Mm-hmm. And in terms of conjugal visits, that all fits in the same category. There may be other things that would come in. They committed a crime. They were convicted by a jury, or if they weren't just judged, they went to the judge. They committed a crime. There's no question about that. Now, to say that now you've committed a crime, but you're still going to have all the freedoms that you had before you committed the crime, to me is nonsense. That simple.
There was another one for authority on for plea bargaining in drunken driving cases. That's
well, plea bargaining has always been a real sore point with me and other, yeah. other legislators. I'm not alone in, and the public at large. Again, we've talked about my views on traffic safety.
Yeah.
It's just you can't get too tough on those that drink and drive, in my book.
There was a creation of a three-member public utility commission and an extension of the $1 income tax checkoff for political donations and a limit on campaign expenditures. Were any of those issues things that you had strong convictions about?
With three-member, I never could see the value of it. Now we have it, I don't see the value of it. Mm-hmm. I just didn't think it was necessary. The dollar checkoff for political parties, I've been opposed to that all along. I do not believe in the use of public funds mm-hmm. for political purposes. Don't believe it. There was a sunset on it. They wanted to, while I was governor, they wanted to renew it. And I said, go ahead, but I'm going to veto it. And it was not renewed during my tenure as a governor. There was a dollar checkoff. This dollar checkoff idea all began with fish and wildlife, where we watchable wildlife, and that was a good cause. And everybody jumped in because this was an easy way to get a few extra bucks.
All right.
And you just got to keep the tax form as clean as you can. The third item was which?
A limit on campaign expenditures.
Yeah, well, we talked about that.
We talked about that.
That just guarantees the incumbent an advantage over the challenger.
In terms of the assessment of the 79 legislature, the 60th legislature in 1979, your administration fared pretty well, didn't it?
Very well. You know, there's a notable things like Kellywood being turned down and things of that kind. But when I weighed it all out, this is not a precise measuring stick, but I bet you I got 95% of the things that I'd wanted. And that's darn good for the first term governor. I can recall Tom McCall's first term. It was so rough on him that he genuinely was thinking about not running for re-election.
Really?
It was so tough on him. I got through great order.
The news media considered one of your major contributions of this session was the Alternate Energy Development Commission.
Yeah.
Did we discuss that?
Yeah. Well, briefly.
We talked about the energy program.
That we created. I asked for $265,000. We created that commission. They did make a report for the next session of the legislature. Mm-hmm. I really believe it's one of the great pieces of work done by anyone. Mm-hmm. And if the federal government was going to do that, they would spend millions and millions of dollars, probably not with as good a result. And we did talk about it. And my question to them was, okay, then let's not talk in this abstract sense about wind, tide, and all the rest of that sort of solar. Let's find out, is it possible? How much is it going to cost? When can we get there? What are the barriers, political or social barriers? And they had a fine report. John Gray was the chair. Had six subcommittees, each one of them dealing with a certain subject.
The Statesman Journal said that the $700 million tax relief package was a major accomplishment. Did you feel that way?
We talked about that, and I told you that it's one of the mistakes I made by not vetoing that bill, because we wasted an awful lot of money. We did talk about that.
That's right.
And they put that into property tax relief, and I'm not to say that it shouldn't have been property tax relief, but what it was for everybody. I'm not sure we covered it that carefully when we talked about it. This is for everybody. For millionaires and the lowest of low income, everybody got it. Well, it was very clear. Remember we talked about the desired and essential? And we wasted a lot of money giving property tax relief to people who didn't really need property tax relief. Anyway, I didn't do it.
The Journal said that the ATIA, they've got ATIA Johnson proposal to expedite land use litigation when plaudits in that field.
Yeah.
Was Lee Johnson really a major contributor on that program?
Lee Johnson, this is a legal thing.
Right.
And this was the land use appeals. I'm trying to put the right name to it.
LUBA?
LUBA.
Mm-hmm. Land Use Board
of Appeals.
Of Appeals.
Mm-hmm. Land Use Board of Appeals. And that was sort of a legal thing, and that's the direction Lee, of course, was going. And the whole idea was to kind of move this whole process along so that he can close it out with somebody making the decision.
Right.
And in this case, sort of an external somebody. Remember way back when we were talking about being in the legislature and the tax court. Again, I think that's the right term. But anyway, somebody without a lawyer could go appeal outside the Department of Revenue. Because up to that point, the only appeal you had was to the body that was assessing you.
Right.
And this is the same idea, sort of outside the process. Again, like all the other processes, all of a sudden it gets much too stilted and much too built in concrete, and it perpetuates itself, and it doesn't solve all the problems that we hoped it would, but that was the intent.
Going on to some of the other activities, were there any interim involvements in terms of dealing with the legislature that you were involved with?
Not particularly. The thing I noticed, of course, having been a legislator, I didn't notice it that much, but being a governor, I did. And then, of course, I noticed it then, but it kept coming, that government almost grinds to a halt when the legislature comes into session. Your department heads and management of government, and they're constantly at the beck and call of the legislative body. And it's good to get them to go home so you can start running government.
You're making it sound as though the legislature is an annoyance.
I know they're, you know, I came from that body, and obviously they're a very important body. But there are, you know, that doesn't mean there aren't some problems in terms of management of government. And it's a definite handicap to try to run government when the legislature's in session. They just consume the time of not only department heads, but division heads and other people who are working to answer questions of what the legislature wants.
Is there an alternative to that?
No. It's just, remember, way back I said the democracy is an inefficient form of government.
Right.
That's part of the inefficiency of it. Mm-hmm. I've tried to explain to my business friends, you know, I say to them, okay, so you have a board in every month or every 2 months or every 3 months, whatever it is. They come, meet for a day, jolly each other, and go home. And they're out of your hair for that period of time. I got a legislature that comes to my board of directors, and they're there for 6 months, day in and day out.
What is your relationship as governor to the emergency board? Or any of the other standing interim committees?
My relationship, obviously, what the emergency board is the theory of an emergency board. I've got to stress theory. is that some things will come up that unexpected.
Right.
There should be a body of people that can deal with it. That is in the budget sense, mm-hmm. strictly budget mm-hmm. sense. And that should be, there should be a body to take care of it. It got pretty well bent out of shape. And it got to be a process that I noticed mm-hmm. was that many agencies would wait till the session's over. It's easier to get money out of the e-board than it would be from Ways and Means. So my relationship, and I made it very clear to my agencies that there, I had to know what the appeal to the emergency board was, and I had to agree that in fact that, yeah, it was something necessary. And there'd be no capricious going to the e-board. That's because of my legislative experience. I said, I'm not going to have that happen in my administration. Mm-hmm. That would be my relationship.
Does the governor have a relationship with what the e-board dispenses with during that?
We have no...
Or any
if
say?
If I were to agree that my agency could go to the e-board and indeed there was an emergency, or something unexpected, emergencies a little bit overdrawn, then all I could do is have them appeal to the e-board and mm-hmm. the e-board's going to make a decision. They'll say yes or no. I don't have any part in that. It's just like a legislative session. Yeah. I can propose a bill and they can say no or they can say yes. Same thing.
What about in the drawing up of your budget? Do you have an actual budget director?
Yeah.
And I presume that the budget director is working all the time and on
yes.
the next budget or
yeah.
or getting the current budget passed. Does that budget director have any kind of relationship with people in the legislature? Is he or she working with the legislature on trying to coordinate the budget?
Yeah, but still, it's the contest between executive and legislative. But let me just take a second. We have what's called the executive department. In the executive department is the budget division, personnel, I've forgotten what else, intergovernmental. That's in the executive department. The largest part of what they do is the budget. Mm-hmm. And so the head of the executive department, by and large, it's his major job is the budget, mm-hmm. the development of the budget, and then, of course, watching agencies and see if they're spending or overspending. Again, because I was part of the process, I wanted to make the executive department now, but that would be the budget division, mm-hmm. Really more an ally of state agencies. They were the enemy of even state agencies. Mm-hmm. Because in the budget building process, they would submit their budget to the executive department, and we would have analysts, quite a few, and they would review it, and sometimes they'd say, no, we're not going to do that. Now they're making decisions, and I wanted to make the decision. At the same time, I thought it was necessary, that is the executive department, budget division, and I wanted to make them more an ally, a working partner with the state agencies rather than the enemy of a state agency. The budget division, as I hit it rather quickly, but let me do it simply. Again, with the, I'm going to use the word analyst, that's not quite right, but the fact is that there are people there in the budget division that are assigned certain agencies. Mm-hmm. That's their job. To analyze it, to go through it, to deal with it. So let's take one step. The one step is building the budget. And the agencies build the budget, and in my case, work the budget division work with them. And obviously, the final choices are all mine. And let's now say that that's happened, and they went to the legislature, and the legislature passed it. Now, the budget division is the one that watches what goes on in the agency, and are they overspending, or you'll kind of keep an eye on a continuing basis. It's an important part, an important position in state government, very important division in state government. We have some very, very good people that have, born and raised in the executive department. excellent, very bright people. We've been very lucky over all the years while I was in the legislature and as a governor. They do a good, very good job. And it's not an easy job. It actually, the remember we talked about the econometric model for projecting revenues and then watching how the revenues are matching our projections, mm-hmm. rather than the single economist who said what expected the income of Oregon would be. And that actually initiated out of the budget division. It came from Bob Smith, who was then my director.
Right.
And it just worked very well. Very well. And it's a good division of government. In my case, we really basically removed the antagonism between the budget division and state agencies.
Yeah.
Didn't mean to say that they were always going to agree with what it, but the fact is they were more allies than they were enemies.
Yeah. Hmm. That seems like it would be a major accomplishment to have been able to.
Yeah, but just a matter of talking to those folks and talking to state agencies and say, look, I want you guys to work together.
Right.
I don't want you to work independent of one another. And that was, well, it's a fundamental thing that I believed in moving in as governor, because I had observed, and we touched briefly on that, that there often wasn't clear direction from the top.
Mm-hmm.
Agencies were kind of left on their own devices. Nobody was really running the thing. A whole lot of people were running it. And so my own personal theory was, okay, I'm going to give them a clear direction from the top. This is what I want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. Now, you go ahead and work out the details of how you want to do this. Mm-hmm. You know what my objective is. And that's good. That's good in the sense that they know the direction that the chief executive is going. And that's good. Now they know what the parameters are, what they're supposed to do. And now they're devoted to doing just that. It becomes more efficient that way, mm-hmm. rather than just keep casting about. I told you the story of a nursing home inspector came out and said, you got to do this, this, and this.
Right.
And about 3 or 4 months later, another one from the same agency came and said, no, you're supposed to do this, and this. Do this, this, and this. Well, you see, there's no clear direction from the top.
Yeah.
And so I can't really blame the state agency because they're left to their own devices. Everybody's, sort of an anarchy kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, that's what the executive department is. It's very good. Bob Smith went over to lottery. I needed him. He's a bright man. And I made him the head of the lottery division. There's some good people in it that's still there. I mean, not in the budget division necessarily, but in state government.
Mm-hmm.
Very bright people.
Well, going on to some of your other activities that year as governor, you were a co-host of a conference on international trade sponsored by the White House and the National Governors Association in Seattle in June of 1979 with Washington's governor, Dixie Lee Ray, and Idaho governor, John Evans. First of all, what was your relationship with, was this your first getting to know them, basically?
Not really with Dixie.
Uh-huh.
After I was elected, I went over and visited with Dixie. Met her for the first time, and she had an office at, Fort Vancouver. You know, they have those old houses there, and they refurbished one for the governor. And we hit it off just really great. Matter of fact, in the short period of time that we were governors together, which were 2 years, we understood each other better than I did with Spellman and later on with Ruth Gardner. We just hit it off real well. Dan Evans I got to know because I think we mentioned to you this regional commission thing, this boondoggle that I referred to. And the governors are the ones that make these decisions. And that's how I got to know Governor Evans.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked together very well. I respected and we respected each other and got along together extremely well. I just felt maybe more comfortable with Dixie. Obviously didn't agree with a lot of the things she did and wondered sometimes why she did some things, but we really hit it off extremely well.
She's quite a colorful person,
yes,
wasn't she?
Yes, she is. But again, it's just this whole idea back to what we talked about earlier, diversifying the economy, international trade was important, and this is the beginning of it. But that international trade thing is another regional commission thing funded by the federal government.